Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Delta Flyers. We are so glad that you're here. Now, if you want to listen to this podcast ad-free, you can do that for as little as $3 a month.
Yep, $3 a month. If you go to patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and become a patron at the $3 tier, you have zero ads and you have 40 minutes, 50 minutes, sometimes over an hour of bonus material. It's absolutely amazing. So that's one way to go ad-free. Welcome to the Delta Flyers, Journey Through the Wormhole with Dax, Quark, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong, for the complete and exciting version of this podcast. Check out patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and sign up to become a patron today. Hello, Armin and Robbie.
Hello, Garrett.
Hello, Garrett.
What a sweet introduction. Thank you.
Yeah. What's going on in the world of Armin Shimerman today or this last week? Anything crazy?
Kitty and I just booked a cruise to Greece.
You found the right one? You
we
found
did.
The right
we
one.
We did. Okay. We found the right one. We're having a little problems with airfares. Not that the cruise only has so many flights that you can take, and we don't like any of them. So we're trying to find some sort of arrangement so that we can get to Greece. Everything else is taken care of. So we're looking forward to, we're going to do that in October for my 75th birthday. Thank you very much. And my wife's 70th birthday.
Good for you guys. Are you doing, is this cruise like one of those adventure you had mentioned? Maybe it's kind of National Geographic
that's
style.
Why it's, we're not using National Geographic, although they were really quite good. But what is it? We're it's here somewhere. I can't remember what the cruise line is.
But it's an adventure.
It's an adventure. And we're going to, see a lot of historic sites that I've read about for years in my studies of classical literature. So.
That's going to be so amazing. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
And that's October.
In October. Kitty's birthday is in October and mine is in early November. So we actually will be on the ship during Kitty's birthday.
When is her birthday? October?
The 22nd of October.
So you're both Scorpios.
And she's just barely a Scorpio. I think she's on what's called the cusp. Yeah.
We got some birthdays.
Yes,
this,
we do.
This time.
Yeah.
We've got Tay Phoenix. On May 6th, happy birthday, Tay.
Happy birthday,
Tay. Happy birthday, Tay Phoenix. We also have Heidi McClellan on May 7th, the day after Tay. So happy birthday to Heidi. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Heidi.
Happy birthday, Heidi, May 7th.
Last but not least, we have Jennifer Vaughn. 2 days later, May 9th. Happy birthday, Jennifer.
Happy birthday, Jennifer.
Jennifer, have a great birthday on May 9th.
Yes.
And remember, you're all younger than I am.
You look very young. I would never have guessed. That's the first time you've said your age, or your birthday, or anything like that. I would have guessed you many years younger than 75.
You would have guessed wrong. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's very kind. I appreciate that. But I am what I am, and I'm very happy to be what I am.
Good for you.
Your year of the ox, by the way, Chinese astrology. So very.
I actually
sign.
Did know that.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shall we start, gentlemen,
Let's
on
do.
This episode?
Yes.
All right. So we are reviewing, recapping, discussing the episode, The Circle. The Circle, which is basically a part two of a three-parter, it seems. Yes? So we've already seen The Homecoming. Now we have The Circle. And let us begin, Robbie. Let's hear your poetry synopsis, your limerick
Absolutely.
For The Circle.
Please. Happy to do it. Love sharing my creativity in the poetic field.
Yeah.
Here we go. Kira's leaving and gets her friends' admiration. But Jaro's the victim of Cardassian manipulation. Quark's ready to scram. Odo uncovers the scam, but Sisko's not leaving the station.
Very good.
Good, thank very you. Good. That yeah. covers everything. I think we can close now.
Okay, we're done.
We are done with this episode.
Haiku time.
Yes, haiku time. Here we go. My haiku for the circle. Kira is kidnapped. Jaro is behind circle. A coup is starting.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Very good.
More
very
nice. Succinct. Okay.
Yes, yeah, abstract impressionistic. Although neither one of us reach the heights of Terry Farrell's poetry. Terry's poetry, I get like moved by her, the way she like rhymes her words, and she's great.
And she's got a great voice too.
I haven't heard any of those. I would love to hear.
Yeah. You've got to hear Terry some of those poems. Mm-hmm. I'm always impressed.
Armin, okay. Do you have an etymology?
I have a pedantic segment right now. So, circle. In Old English, is pronounced circul. In Latin, it's circulus. Circulus. It's the short for circulus is circus, by the way.
Oh.
In English, in Middle English, it's cercle. There are many definitions, of course, of circle, but my favorite is, quote, a figure of magic or necromancy. For example, the example is from 1529.
Mm-hmm.
Necromancers put their trust in their circles, within which they think themselves sure against all ye devils in hell, which I think applies to this episode.
Yes, it does. Mm. Yes. Like just trusting that inner group that you've attached yourself to.
Right. Yeah. And the devils of hell are all the non-Bajorans in the episode.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Interesting. I like the circus connection. I've never made that connection with the word circle and circus, but the circus ring.
Exactly. And I believe that's why the Romans called it the circus, because it was round. I believe, if I remember from my studies, that's why it was called the circus.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Mm, I love etymology.
It's so cool. Well, this episode is written by Peter Allen Fields.
Yes.
And directed by my old acting teacher, Corey Allen.
There
we go. You do recall Corey, I'm sure, working with him. Armin, yes?
I certainly do. Not only did I work with him on Deep Space Nine, but I worked with him as an actor on a film as well. We got a lot of good conversations in while we were doing the film. And I remind everybody that Corey Allen was the director of the pilot episode of Next Generation.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think you told us the story, the connection of Patrick Stewart and why Corey Allen is responsible for the Patrick Stewart of it all.
Exactly. Something I learned while doing the film with him when we were both actors on the project.
I think I told you this before, Armin, that Corey was also teaching Chase Masterson in this, at the same time. So
I did not know that.
Yeah, no, I don't remember you saying that. I don't think you said that before.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So we were in class at the time of this, pretty much at the time of this episode, I mean, during this season, was when this class was happening. And it probably, there was probably, honestly, it's a small class, maybe 12, 13 students. And Chase and I were both in that same acting class together.
Wow.
This is before either of us, before she got on DS9 and before I got on Voyager. So pre-Trek is when we were in this class together. Yeah.
Corey Allen has the Trek magic. He just gets everybody on Trek.
He does, yeah. And Corey, although he was at that time when he was teaching us, he was dealing with Parkinson's, so he was getting the tremors. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole thing, which was starting to affect him. And I know that that's something that he wasn't overjoyed about having contracted, but still such an amazing teacher. And it's just such an amazing human being, and the history of him being on Rebel Without a Cause is also really quite impressive as well. And how he got that role in that movie. It's just amazing.
Later on in this podcast, I will tell you something that Corey did in this episode, which is amazing. I've never encountered it ever before.
Oh, goodness. Wow.
And it is a truly amazing feat that he accomplished, but that's for later.
Okay,
good.
Looking forward to it.
Can I run through these guest stars real quick?
Yes, please,
Robbie?
Do.
Okay, Richard Boehmer again from West Side Story, Tony, as Lee Nalas.
Yes.
Stephen or Stephen Macht as General Krim.
Stephen Macht as
mm-hmm. General Krim. My very first reaction to seeing Stephen Macht was that he could be related to the actor John Bernthal from Walking Dead, from The Punisher. But in actuality, he has a son who is an actor who Robbie McNeil directed, actually, of all people. Gabriel Macht, who plays Harvey Specter
in the show Suits. Gosh,
the television show Suits, Robbie directed, I think it was the final season of Suits Robbie came in and directed, or the next to last, yeah. And he's the lead. So you've definitely talked to this gentleman before. This is General Krim's son, basically, the guy that you worked with. Isn't that crazy? Wow. Yeah.
And before you go on, I have one little footnote for Stephen. Stephen and I have worked together many times doing theater together.
Mm.
So I know for a fact, Stephen Macht was the second choice for Picard.
What?
Wow.
You're kidding.
And it is is interesting to me, it just occurred to me as you were speaking, Garrett, that here's Corey Allen, who directed the pilot and had a choice on who was going to play Picard.
Yeah.
And so was it Corey? I'm just fantasizing. Was it Corey who said, we're going to get Stephen Macht to play this part?
Oh,
yes. Yes.
Which, as I was reading the script, there was just a note in the script, very subtle and didn't probably mean anything. But when I read the note, I thought, looks like this character of Krim is supposed to recur. But it didn't. It looks like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's crazy. We also have Bruce Gray as Admiral. This is what really bugged me. Yes. Bruce Gray is Admiral Chakotay. And I'm thinking, guys, why would you repeat a name again? It's clearly Voyager was being written about this time.
About the
exact same time. So was it something that was in the head of of the executive producers that were still there? Was it just Berman and who is still there at this point, Rob?
Berman is the linchpin, I think, between at this point in time. Piller is on his way out. He's gotten sick.
Okay. But Piller was still part of Voyager in the beginning, too. So I'm wondering, did Piller come up with the name Chakotay and he just threw that in?
Or Jerry Taylor was around.
Yeah.
Who knows? Or maybe they didn't even make the connection that they had already used this name, and somebody in their subconscious just threw it out in a room and it came to life again.
Yeah.
It's a weird coincidence.
It's so weird. And they spell it differently. They spell it C-H-E-K-O-T-E, but it's definitely Chakotay, the way they pronounce it. So that blew me away. Philip Anglim as Vedic Barayal. Special guest star Louise Fletcher as Vedic Wynn. And I was just thinking, if she got special guest star, I feel like Frank Langella could have got extra special guest star just to give himself
a little more special guest star.
Most specialist of all, no credit, Frank Langella.
Yes.
Co-stars, we have Mike Genovese as Zeph No, the captain of the Chrysari freighter. Would this individual be related to Cosmo Genovese, possibly? That's not the most common last name in Italian last name. So
I don't know.
Maybe a coincidence.
Probably not. Cosmo was our script supervisor.
And sometimes ours.
And sometimes
he wasn't around.
Yeah.
So he would fill in. Okay.
You know, Armin, I stayed in touch with Cosmo till he passed away a few years ago. He was in actor's home, motion picture home.
Yeah.
And Dennis Madelon would go visit him all the time, and we would FaceTime and send pictures and celebrate birthdays. And
I envy you. That's great.
Cosmo was a lovely, lovely man.
He was.
I know. I digress from the Genovese.
No. I think it's great.
Enough good things about Cosmo.
No, I mean he deserves this time for you to talk about him or to say something nice about him, because I don't think there was a soul on our production that did not like Cosmo Genovese.
Yeah. Same with Judy Brown for your script supervisor, who went on to Enterprise. Judy went on to Enterprise, and Judy would sometimes come to Voyager, rarely, but Judy went on to Enterprise.
They're great people, and they have really hard jobs. They really do.
We also have another co-star, Eric Server as the peace officer, and Anthony Gadara as the Cardassian in this episode. So that rounds out our guest stars and our co-stars.
Big cast.
Very, very big cast. A lot of a lot of, you know, very interesting people in there. That's for sure.
And locations, which is rare for our show.
Yes.
Locations.
Yes. All right. So to start off the whole episode, after a very brief recap, they show a quick recap of the prior episode. We then have an exterior shot of the station, and we are now in the commander's office.
I have a question. In the recap, didn't they talk about, they talked about the Alliance for Global Unity.
Yeah,
but then they get a new name, the Circle. When did they start calling them the Circle? I didn't quite track. I mean, I made the connection, but I was like, when did that happen? Like, it sort of suddenly we're calling everybody the Circle.
The first time that we mentioned the Circle, that we hear about the Circle, they say this group is called the Alliance for Global. They already described them.
So they're both the Circle and the Alliance for Global Unity.
Yes.
Okay.
We're in the commander's office. Sisko is very unhappy about Kira's dismissal because he's talking with Jaro, Minister Jaro, about this. And Jaro basically says it's a promotion for Kira. And I love this really weird thing that comes up with Sisko talking about, well, I thought it was one of those things where there's a warm wind blowing in from Minicoy. And you're like, what? And is this about...
As if this is some saying that everybody knows.
Everyone knows this saying, clearly. A famous ambassador from Minicoy who was full of hot air. So it's sort of, you know, they're positioning.
They're playing chess. They're definitely... And Jaro, in the end, you know, Sisko doesn't trust Jaro in this scene. Clearly,
no.
They don't trust each other. And
no.
Jaro's just covering. He's lying. He's claiming it's a promotion, but Sisko doesn't believe him. How do you feel, Armin, about watching this scene? I know Frank Langella. I know Avery Brooks as well. I imagine this was a very tense scene with those two actors.
Off camera?
Yes.
Yes.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think so. I think there was jockeying for power here. Yeah.
Exactly.
Did anyone notice that one shot where Sisko crosses frame and Jaro or Frank has to kind of track him as he moves over? He almost looked into camera. He kind of like stopped and then pushed himself forward a little bit. Like
Frank?
There was the Frank or, did. Yes. I felt like the very beginning, this was the most unconfident.
The man's an amateur. What can you say? He's an amateur.
What has he done?
I mean, how much Star Trek has he done? You know,
exactly.
I'm just saying, guys, you know how much I love Frank.
I do.
I felt like he was nervous in this front scene. And clearly,
I don't think he was nervous. I think
you think there was a little. Okay. So
knowing
there's a little
both
power
of them,
struggle,
having worked
struggle.
With both of them.
Yeah.
I bet there was a lot of tension making this.
Okay.
Scene.
All right.
Because of the content of the scene, they could use their real feelings in the scene in an effective way.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would be my guess.
I also think it was interesting that Frank chose to sort of pick up the revered baseball at the very end, almost like he was kind of saying, you know what, I can grab your little keepsake, whatever you have. And
Armin, are you looking to see if he actually did the script?
Yeah.
Armin's got the script, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if we've said that yet, but he found the original script, which is
so excited.
Rare.
No, it's not in the script.
This was Frank going like, I'm going to get in your brain a little bit.
In your business.
This is your beloved baseball. And I'm putting my paws all over it.
Power move.
Yeah, it was a power move all the way.
Yeah.
He did that right before he left the room too.
Yep.
So, okay.
I just want to make one comment about something that Jaro says in the scene. He says, one of my fellow ministers was attacked by the Circle. Now, we've been led to believe that the Circle is anti anything that isn't Bajoran. So the idea that now the Circle has matriculated or morphed into now they're attacking their own. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Problem. Yeah. So clearly this is a rival to Jaro that was attacked. And I mean, now that we know that
that's what he's saying, which is yes.
We don't know, but all of a sudden now Bajorans are being attacked as well by the Circle, and that really is a step forward. This makes it a little bit easier to believe that it could be a coup, which is what we're going to find out later.
Yeah. Well, Miles comes in and says that Jake has been waiting on the comm to talk to his dad.
Do you think Sisko told Jake, if you need to get a hold of me, don't call me directly on the comm. Call ops, and whoever answers there will come over and tell me. I don't get that. Like, typically in Star Trek.
Well, he could have put, like, do not disturb. on his comm.
His combat.
And then it gets forwarded.
Yes, but understand, Jake does not have a comm badge.
What?
Oh, that's right.
He's not Starfleet.
No,
Jake is not Starfleet.
Okay, so he's in the room using...
He had to go to a phone booth.
He
had to find the right change, yes. Precisely. And then call his dad. Okay.
Yeah, because all the phones only take Latinum. So yeah, absolutely.
Sorry. Okay. I don't know. So no one thought that was odd, Robbie?
No, I did not.
You didn't. It didn't bother
He's
you.
In an important meeting. He's gone on Do Not he's Disturb. Not
okay, fine.
Jake's like... calling somebody. Hey, I got to get my dad. Where's my dad?
Right.
He's not picking up.
Right.
I mean, well, I have Do Not Disturb on my laptop.
Do.
So I.
That's right. Know. It's so. There. It's there. Well, Sisko does agree to go down there. He doesn't tell them what it is. And when he shows up at their quarters, it's their quarters. It's their door. And it has the same, the sign, the symbol is there. It's there.
Which means we're really.
They're pretty on much. The station.
Yeah, we're there everywhere.
We are. Yep.
Oh, my God.
This is my favorite scene coming up now.
Go.
Maybe in the history of this series.
This is the scene I want to talk about.
Okay. Before you describe it, all I can say is my first thought was, this is an amazing stage play with all these those multiple entrances, the blocking, which is so complex.
Everybody's and moving and bouncing
they're all
around.
All moving. Yeah. My God. Okay. Go ahead, Robbie. Pick it up.
Okay. So Kira's packing. Odo comes in and he's trying to talk her into fighting to stay. Odo's really wound up about this. He's very upset. He's like, Kira, why won't you fight this? Like, you should stay here. And then Dax comes in to return some skin lotion, which I love.
I know. Skin lotion. No one has skin lotion on Voyager in 7 years, but here we have skin lotion. I love
By the
it.
Way, before Dax comes in,
it's
there is a
the
very...
It's to take the dots off. To take the dots off.
Trill markings off. She applies them every day. Yeah.
I did love the moment before Dax comes in with Odo where he's really wound up.
Yes.
And Kira pauses for a moment. She says, you know, Odo, I'll miss you too. It was a sweet,
that was great.
Sweet moment. Which
that was
I,
really good.
Yeah. Felt like a new insight into that relationship.
For sure.
But Dax comes in with a lotion. Then she asks Kira, you know, what's your job? And they're talking about this boring desk job when Bashir walks in. And I love this exchange where Bashir's like, hey, I wanted to come say goodbye. Yeah. Dax is still talking about the desk job. She's like, God, that's boring.
Yes.
Bashir's like, wait, what? What are you talking
about? Yeah.
So the misunderstanding, it's a very sort of farcical misunderstanding, you know, sliding doors kind of thing.
Especially that one little interchange where she sort of, everyone's peppering her with questions and she answers each of them. She goes, no, they didn't. No, they haven't. Like that.
Yes.
And it was like we were watching a stage play. It was like, oh, this is so well written and it's constantly moving. It looks great. Yep.
And then I think, does Miles come in next?
O'Brien does come in next to say
O'Brien
it was a pleasure serving with her. Yes.
Yeah, pleasure. But then he's like, maybe I'll come back later. So things are getting kind of chaotic. And just when you think it can't get more chaotic, Quark walks in with a bottle of Synthale, her favorite. But it's a tiny bottle. It looked like a little bottle of like
perfume bottle.
A what?
A perfume
like
bottle.
A perfume bottle. It was tiny.
Yeah.
Well,
he didn't expect everyone to be there. That's why.
No. So.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, of course.
Exactly. He wants to have a, he thought it would be an intimate farewell drink with Kira.
Yeah.
Right. Because he's been in the bedroom in the last episode. So
that's
now he's
right.
He's making his move.
He's making his move.
Yeah. Right before she leaves. This is the time to make my move. But
yeah. Bring
do
some Synthale into it. Get her a little drunk.
Yes.
And I love how he says, you know, a shoulder to cry on. You'd be surprised how often that works with women.
Yes.
Who do you say
Odo.
That to?
I say it to Odo.
Odo. Very funny. I laughed out loud.
I want to rewind your entrance when you first come in, Armin. Mm. You make the choice, or maybe it's in the script, where you kind of chum up with O'Brien. You slap your arm on his shoulder right there. Yes.
It's not in the script.
It's not. You threw that in there. Okay. Yeah. That was your blocking. All right. Yes, Robbie, continue.
The very end of the scene, Beryl comes in and he, everybody gets very solemn and respectful when he enters, very much, much different tone with Beryl in the room. And he suggests that maybe Kira come to the monastery.
Yes. Because he says, quote, it can help when the spirit gets a little bruised, end quotes.
Yes. All right. So that's the scene.
No, that's not the scene. Hear. That is the scene on camera. That's not the scene in rehearsal.
Oh, boy. What happened?
This is what Corey did, which you've already alluded to. You didn't even know you were alluding to it, but you did. You both said it was like a stage play.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the way Corey saw it, too.
Okay.
And in fact, I think it's 8 pages. I could look, but I won't take up the time. I believe it's 8 pages of script. We came into work that day, and Corey turned to the crew, except for everybody but the DP. Mm-hmm. He said, "You can all go home. We're not shooting anything today."
What?
Wow.
We're just going to rehearse this like a play. We're going to work out the blocking. We're going to do it as a one-er. Now, when I look at the episode and see it, I went, well, it wasn't shot as a one-er, but they may have added more cameras the next day.
Wow.
But first, on that day, he said, "We're all going to rehearse this as a play. You can't imagine the marks all over the floor for all of us.
Oh,
the different colors."
Yeah.
And we rehearsed it for up until, I would say, we probably started at 7 in the morning, and by 3, we'd gotten it down. And they released us as well. The next day, this was 8 pages.
Wow.
And the next day, we shot that sucker in about 25 minutes. All 8 pages.
What?
Wow.
So it was extraordinary that people got off, the crew got off.
Mm-hmm.
But the time that they lost by rehearsing it as a play, they picked up on the next day.
On the shooting.
Because we did it all in as a one-er in 20 minutes. And I imagine what happened was we had the main camera, but then he set up the camera so he had footage that he could interact with. But we did those 8 pages as a play.
And just so everybody knows, like when I'm directing or producing on a show, we kind of estimate using the page count as a rough estimate of how long it will take. So an 8-page scene with that many people in it, you take the number of pages, you call that an hour per page, so 8 hours.
Yeah.
And then you take the number of characters and you divide in half, and that's the other amount of hours. So an 8-page scene with 6 people would have been about 11 hours. I would have scheduled for that scene.
Which they did in 25 minutes.
So we've been saying 8, but it's actually 7.
Okay, 7.
7 pages. So
it should have been 10 hours.
7 hours. I don't know how many people are in the scene. I'd have to go back and count, but I feel like there's about 6.
There are 6. There are 6. Yeah.
6. So take the pages.
Hold on. 7. 7 plus Kira.
7. So take the pages, 7 pages. That's 7 hours. Then take the cast count, 7. That's 3.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 and a half hours is what I would give this scene just off the top of math, off the top of my head, if I were scheduling this. And between your rehearsal and filming, that's about what you probably spent on it, though.
Well, as I said, at the intro, I have never experienced that ever shooting a TV show or a film for that matter, but certainly a TV show. The idea that the crew would be excused at 8 o'clock in the morning and say goodbye.
They must have loved that.
They must have loved that. As I heard, now it's just rumor. Yeah. I heard that Berman was not happy about it.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine he was not happy about that.
But
doesn't he save
the truth
money?
Is he got the work done in the amount of time that was needed.
Yeah.
We did it the next day relatively quickly. We got it in the first take, and then they did it again just to have a safety. But
Wow.
Well, it felt like a stage play, and it felt tight. The pace, the dialogue was just snappy and funny. It was great.
Here's a question, Robbie. As a director, would you have shot that differently? Would you not have done it like a stage play? Would you have done something entirely opposite of that?
I think there's no downside. In that kind of scene, there's no downside to an extensive rehearsal. There's only an upside to that because you're looking for tightening up the pace, sharpening the comedy and the reactions. So that takes time to get that kind of rhythm going. But I don't know if I would have staged it exactly the same way. I thought it was well done. And by the way, generally this episode for me, Corey Allen did some shots I'd never seen before in your show. And we're well into this, we're into the second season now. So for him to find new angles, new ways of doing things. I thought that was impressive. I was impressed with it.
Will you address those moments when they happen? Okay, great.
I think, well, and it's about
one
to
last
come
thing,
up.
One last thing. Oh, one of the things that he did so well, it's a little room. It's a little room with seven people in it.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he was able to cover us all as well as he did is really quite impressive. And indeed, when Beriah comes into the scene, it says in the script, the tone changes immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And which I think the actors and the director caught perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, it was well done. Speaking of cool Corey Allen shots, the next scene in Ops, we've got this low angle of Kira walking in. And I felt like the camera was down in the pit. I'd never seen the camera. I'd never seen that angle of Ops before quite so dramatically and theatrically. Yes. So there's an example of a Corey Allen shot. Really,
sure. They must have had the camera on the floor. They must have had the camera on the floor, because if it gave it any elevation, it wouldn't have looked like that.
Yeah,
well, we've never seen those round windows up top. You know how she walks in and you see everything up high like that. Yep. We've never seen that so far.
Well, she walks in. She's very sad. She's looking around. She's going to leave. Lee Nollis arrives, her replacement. He's very sorry. He doesn't even know what he's going to do here.
As the Navark. He doesn't know what Navark, that, nope. What are my duties? Yeah.
Sisko comes in and kind of makes a joke about, well, I think you're supposed to report directly to the prophets, which at first I didn't get was a joke. I don't know how you report to the prophets directly, but I think he was trying to kind of make a joke here. And he says, you know, basically you're just here to help me.
I didn't get that, Robbie.
You get it.
I didn't think it was a joke. I think he really was supposed to report to the prophets.
Really?
Yeah.
How can you report?
To the orb. Talk to the orb. Open up an orb and talk to the
orb. But nobody talks to the orbs, do they?
Well, Lee Nollis is a special guy.
The Navark. But maybe that's what Navark means.
Maybe Navark means one who communes with the prophets. But it's interesting that you brought up that it was a joke from Sisko, because I don't think Avery played it as a joke. It didn't come off that way to me. So
that's why I thought I was confused, because I was like, wait, nobody reports to the prophets. They're energy. I don't know. Yeah. That's an interesting question, you know, what the writer's intentions were, and did they achieve that in the direction performance? I'm not sure. It was a little confusing to me.
Like, does it say in the script he jokingly says that?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
No, it doesn't.
All right. Well, there you go. Sisko does promise that he will get Kira back, because she requests permission to disembark. It's a little sad. He walks her to the turbo lift and he watches her go as the turbo lift descends, which is an image that we see over and over again. If there's an early theme for me, it's the turbo lift. it's happening.
But
is a lot.
This the shot where the camera, her point of view, where
he
it goes
sees
into
her
the
going
black
down? Yeah.
And then doesn't it go into, there's
that's
one
later.
Shot in the episode.
That's okay. Later. Yeah, that's later. Yeah.
What's interesting for me is that turbolift, which did work. It certainly took you to a different floor.
Yeah.
But it always jerked, at least in my experience with it. So the fact that they got it not to jerk in this take.
You mean it continuously jerked as it moved, or just jerked
just
in the beginning?
It was always this as you were standing in it, you know?
Oh, you're kidding me.
That's not very Star Trek-y.
No, it has to be smooth. It's amazing that they don't show that.
This is make-believe.
Did you have, on your set, did you have doors that would bounce and they'd have to do it over again if the doors?
No, we never had doors to bounce, but we all learned, I'm sure you did as well, never to speak while you were going through a door.
Yeah.
Because the sound of the door meant you had to do ADR, additional dialogue replacement. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. We had a lot of bouncing doors. If the you know, the ship door as it shut did a boom like that,
they'd have to do it again, because it's not supposed to boom. It's not supposed to bounce at all.
Yeah.
Are we done with this scene?
Our doors were professional. Yeah.
Your door people person. Next up we have a Dan Curry special, a matte painting on the surface of Bajor.
Beautiful
basically
planet shot.
The monastery grounds kind of is what it is, I think. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I think we've seen it before. I think we've
it felt like a reuse of something, yeah.
For sure. Gardens at the monastery. Kira is busy at work setting stones. But unfortunately, it's crooked. Vedic Beriah was there looking on. And Kira, she says essentially that it's just not working out for her. And my question to Armin is, do Vedics lead they do not lead a life of celibacy, I guess. Is that?
No.
Okay.
No.
So they can be married and everything then if they want. Okay. Because there's definitely a moment shared between Vedic Burial and Kira.
There's more than a moment.
We're not to that point yet.
No. I'm saying in this scene, I literally watch the scene and then I make my notes. My first note is this scene was creepy as it's like, what is going on here? Who is this? Well, what are they talking about? There was so much subtext and I don't know. Okay. I found it a little,
there is weird. A little bit of that in this, in the end of the other scene, the previous scene, when he comes in, there's a sense of
a little bit of that. Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It's very heavy in this scene.
It's confusing to me. I was like, is this about an evil plan? Is this about seduction? Is this about, is he like becoming a god? I didn't know what was happening.
He's a holy man. He's a spiritual person, correct? This is a spiritual
position. He had never behaved this weirdly to me before. I actually found him to be calm and very comforting before.
I would imagine what the writers had in mind, and I don't know, it's a guess. Yeah. Is that we've taken Kira off the station. Now we're trying to give a reason why she wouldn't come back to the station.
Oh, okay.
And so it's not just his acting towards her, it's her acting towards him as well. And that somehow, maybe if a romance of having a family, of getting married, it might be a reason for her to stay on Bajor and not go back to the station. I think that's what they were aiming at. Or maybe they were just trying to set up a romance between the two of them for future episodes.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Well, I didn't think about that, a reason to stay. That's a great point. It didn't play that way to me because I was so weirded out by this, to be honest.
It was weird. He was creepy. But at the same time, it's hard to get a fix on what this actor was playing, because first of all, before, like Robbie said, he seemed like someone that you took solace in. Like if he was there, you felt comfortable and relaxed.
Safe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Safe. But all of a sudden this episode, there's just some weird undertones that this actor is putting on, and the looks and the stares. And now Robbie's heard me talk about my initial talent agent when I booked Voyager being the Stephen Wright of agents, the stand-up comic who had that deadpan dry delivery. This is the Stephen Wright of Bajorans. He's so dead, so dry in his lines.
Seemed like a different kind of character to me in this episode than the previous
prior
episode.
One. Yes.
Yes.
He was dry.
I started thinking he's the bad guy.
Yes.
It's all bullshit. He's been lying to
me. Or maybe he's the circle. Maybe he's part of the circle.
Exactly.
Right?
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think, Armin?
I felt that as well. I'm a big fan of Philip Anglim's. As you all must know, this is the man that created the Elephant Man on Broadway.
Yeah. Yes.
No, he's an incredibly talented actor.
Yeah. And I just thought it was he played it as an extension of the non-emotional performance that he'd given in other episodes.
Okay.
So he continued that way. Also, we haven't touched upon it yet, but in a moment we're going to find out that he's had some visions as well. And so maybe he's acting upon that. But I think perhaps the director should have realized
modulated that a little bit. Yeah, eased us into this transition for this character. Because I didn't know where it was going. So it was so heavy for me that I went to, he's been lying. He's a bad guy. Where I went.
Armin brings up a really valid point, because he does talk. We do learn later that Vedic Burial has already, you know, consulted the orbs and had a vision of his own, which had Kira in it, which in my guess, the same thing happened where they were lovers. You know what I'm saying? So now, as the actor, he's already read the script. He knows what's going to happen in the future. So he's thinking, I'm already going to play like we are a couple in a way. You know, I'm going to be very like, hey, this is my lady, you know, kind of attitude, where that comes off as, we're not ready for that yet as an audience.
Yeah, the audience thinking, wasn't ready.
What's going on? Like, why is this guy being so weird and creepy right now? And yes, we loved this guy in the prior episode, but all of a sudden something has shifted, but we don't know that that's shifted.
I didn't know what was going on in this scene, honestly. Okay. Here's my notes. I said, Kira's working on the stone path. She can't get it straight. Barayel arrives. She says she's useless here. Yeah. He says, maybe try useless for a while. Right. Then things get really weird. He says it's time, isn't it? Weird. And then he says it's time, isn't it?
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't. It's the writing. I agree with
and
you.
And in the script, the stage direction is she's baffled by that as well. The script says she's baffled by that.
So there's a lot of baffled acting in the scene, which baffled me. Yes.
She thinks that, you know, what the script is indicating is that maybe he's talking about going off to his room.
Yes.
And it's time. And that's exactly what scripted. That's exactly what the writers wanted that to be.
Okay.
I think the writing is very confusing here. I think they were intentionally trying to add complexity and subtext in a way that for me was more confusing than anything.
Than anything else.
I think I've made my point. I'm going to let it go now.
Yeah.
This scene.
But you're right. As a director, Corey could have modulated that a little bit for sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Garrett, do you remember those little die-cast ships that Eagle Moss made?
Of course, they're amazing.
They're incredible, right? I've got one sitting on my desk right now. Well, they went out of business about 2 years ago, but you can still get them from masterreplicas.com, except their deal runs out on June 15th, and this could be your last chance to get them.
It's unbelievable how expensive some of these ships are on auction sites. A few hundred dollars for some of them and all the way up to over $1,000 for some ships.
Gosh. Well, they're doing promotions right now, and we have a very special deal for our listeners. You can get an extra 10% off if you use the code Delta Flyers, all one word, all caps, Delta Flyers.
They don't just do ships. I've heard that they've got plans for new Star Trek stuff too. So if you go to masterreplicas.com and sign up for their newsletter, they will let you know about all the new Trek merchandise they're coming out with, and they'll probably send you some more offers.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of ships. They've even got a Captain Proton ship.
You got until June 15th to check it out. Don't wait.
Barayel takes her inside this orb shrine. She sees the orb case. She says she's always dreamed about this moment. He opens the case, says that this is the third orb of prophecy and change, and she stares at it. The light glows on her face. She asks, what do I do? And as he's leaving off camera, we hear him say, just be useless. And then there's a flash. I was still a little confused by this concept of be useless. I guess it's like be open, right? Just be let go. Let go.
Be zen. Don't have any prior preconceived notions about it. Okay. About it. Just
don't be a type A personality.
Be present. Yes. But also he does say, allow the prophets to guide you before he says be useless. So there's a little bit of a, you know, explanation there.
And that's standard Vedic language. Let the prophets guide you.
Right.
That's a prayer that they repeat ad infinitum.
Yeah. Well, she ends up flashing into this chamber of ministers. She's there. They're all trying to interact with her. She can't hear them very well, what they're saying, but they're all gesticulating.
It seemed like they were cheering for her, but then maybe they're yelling at her. It was hard to know if they were happy or angry with her.
It looked like Wall Street is what it looked like. So go ahead, Armin.
They want to get her attention. That's what the script says.
Okay.
They want to get her attention.
Yes.
And they want to say something to her and they want to get her response. But of course, all of that is not being heard. And that's scripted too, that she can't understand what they're saying.
Right.
But they do give examples of what they're saying.
Really?
They do? Cool. What do they say?
Can you read that? I'm curious.
Sure.
I'm curious. I love that you found this script.
I know. This is awesome.
Oh, my gosh. This is a game changer in terms of like how we understand the episode.
Oh, my God. We can now refer to this is like the Oxford English Dictionary whenever he's looking at our etymology when Armin's doing that. Now we have the script.
So what it says on page 22A of the yellow version of the script.
Yes.
It says legislators, incomprehensible, that's in parenthetical, major, some answers. These is all ellipsis, major, ellipsis, some answers, ellipsis. I demand an explanation. Major, over here, give us the details. Major, may I ask a question? over here, may I have the floor, please? So they're trying to get her attention, and they want to say things, and they also have some questions to ask.
Wow. Okay.
I have a question for you, Armin. This is kind of a union question in a way. So you have a group of background like that. And if they were to have lines, they would be paid differently.
They wouldn't be background.
But as a group, they can say all the things you just read that were scripted.
I would venture to say
yes.
that group of people may or may not have said it, but the loop group did.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a loop group. That,
and right. They are not background people. They are performers that get residuals. So as a union, now we're getting into the weeds, I don't know if the people who were in the scene actually had those lines. They probably didn't. Because they would have gotten into a real mess if they had, union-wise. I think probably the loop group said the lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we do see Dax. Dax is in this vision, and she's dressed in what looks like Vedic Wind's clothing because she does have the signature Sydney Opera House hat on. And Dax tells Kira to listen to them. Kira says she can't hear them. And Dax says, it's all right, and then hugs her. And as Dax pulls back, it's no longer Dax, but it is Vedic Wynn who is standing in front of her, who asks then, can you hear them now, child, or whatever she says. Minister Jaro is on the other side of Kira behind her, and he says that he can hear them and that they are calling to him. And now we know there's something going on here. There's some type of politics happening here. Vedic Brio then appears, and he's not wearing Vedic clothing, but it looks like military clothing. And he
like
tells
her outfit. Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of a military outfit.
That's exactly what it says in the script. Her outfit.
Oh, he's wearing Kira's, Major Kira's outfit.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Vedic Brio appears in Kira's uniform and tells Kira not to listen to Jaro, but to allow herself to hear them, to trust herself. She can hear them. They're calling to her. Vedic Wynn then says, blasphemy. The minute Vedic Wynn says blasphemy, Kira's clothes magically disappear. There's no more clothing left. She asks for help from Brio, who suddenly loses all of his clothing as well, appears behind her. She leans back into him. She turns around to face him, and they're just about to kiss when the orb flashes them right back to reality.
Wow. Yeah, this vision, by the way, I will say, looking at it as a director and producer, it took a long time to shoot this.
Oh my God.
Because of all the magical changes, you couldn't just set up a close-up of Kira and shoot the whole scene.
Right.
You had to shoot five different close-ups of her because she was all over the place, clothed, unclothed, people changing clothes,
This was a whole day, Robbie. Am I right? Would this have taken the entire
day?
They
might have walked away while someone changed, done something else, and come back.
Yeah.
You know, would have been a hard one to sketch. Not an efficient scene to film.
No.
And interesting enough for me, as I was reading this yesterday.
Yeah.
Yes, they got their clothes off. But the way it's described in the script, we should have seen more skin, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you mind reading how it's described?
Okay. For those of you who have kids out there, you know, turn this off.
Oh, boy.
I love this.
Scene 35. Kira, medium close-up, optical. From behind her, a man's arm embraces her arms, which cover her breasts. Moving to discover it is Baril again, behind her now, visibly naked from the waist up, pulling her back to him. And as she feels the skin against skin, she gasps and looks up at his face as it moves down to her lips. So, from that, I get the sense that they wanted to see a little bit more skin.
More skin time.
But Corey chose to use a tighter shot there and not show the lower parts of her body.
Or did shoot it, and the powers that be said no.
No way. Yeah.
Or the actor may have said no.
No way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? You mean you're saying Nana.
Nana or Philip.
Or Philip. Maybe Philip didn't want to show his midsection. That's possible.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of like when I had that little velour tank top and I said, no, I'm not wearing that.
Yes.
I was put in a costume once. Armin.
This was a lady's top, Armin. It was not meant for a man.
No, I was put in something that didn't fit. It just didn't, in so many ways, was wrong. And I walked onto set and the entire crew started laughing at me. And I said, I'm not wearing this. I'm not doing this scene in this outfit.
Sometimes
you gotta say no.
Rob is usually
you have to do that sometime. You have to do that sometime. This Pick was your battles, but yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is one of the very few times in 7 years that Robbie was unhinged. Like literally, like he's usually so calm. And that time he was like, no, I think you took it off on set and just threw it on the ground. You were like, I'm not wearing this. And
maybe.
Like, oh, okay. Robbie,
well, I think I tried. Sorry to digress on this, but I think I tried and I put it on and I'm like,
I was with you.
Be.
You called me into your trailer. Robbie was
when
like,
when the
here.
Crew laughed, I was like, he was no, like, no, I'm not doing it.
I think Robbie, he says, come to my trailer. I go into his trailer. He's like, this is my wardrobe. I'm like, what? That's not, this must be Blana's. This is not your clothing. There's no way. He's like, what? He puts it on and he's like, no. This is not, I can't wear this. I can't. I said, but this is what they gave you, right? He's like, yeah, all right. So he walks in on set. All the crew start. Billy Peets was laughing. Everyone was laughing the second he walked on because it was made of velvet. It was velvet with thin straps, and it was supposed to be a beach scene. And I was like, this is not what Tom Paris or any man would choose to wear. I mean,
it's not what Tom Paris would choose to wear, for sure. Yeah,
no.
Right. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah, yes. But Bob Blackman had a problem with swimsuits. He's a great, wonderful, Emmy-winning designer. But when it came to swimsuits, it was really bizarre.
That wasn't his cup of tea. That's okay. Well, fine. Exterior space shot of the station. And now we're in the security office. We see Odo's view screen. He's having a conversation with obviously someone that he's friends with, a Bajoran law enforcement officer that tells Odo that there were several beatings the night before. But when they go looking for the perpetrators, they are nowhere to be found. Odo thinks that there's somebody that has been tipping or at least giving the Circle rebels tips on where the law enforcement officers are going to be. And so that's why they keep disappearing. The provisional government is now bringing troops into the capital to put an end to the Circle. And that's when our beloved Armin shows up and tells Odo that it's
Work
all
walks
over.
In. He's it's beside himself. It's all over. All of it. We have to leave. We got to get out of here. And he also admits in the scene that he knows the Circle has lots of weapons.
Oh,
that
yeah.
The Cursari are smuggling them in. I don't know if we know they're Cardassian weapons.
No, you don't.
No, we don't.
No, certainly don't know that.
Well, Cursari are smuggling them in.
Right.
But I think, doesn't Odo say something with the Cursari are like botanists or something?
He says, this is very odd because the Cursari are known to be traders of botanic DNA. So we're talking about plant stuff, you know,
vegetarian pacifists.
They're vegans. They're not into weapons.
They're flower children. Yes,
they are.
But Odo asks the computer when the next Cursari vessel is docking. Mm-hmm. It's 36 hours away. And Quark still wants to leave. He's out of here.
Yeah.
And Odo, I love this when Odo says, Quark, I hate to do this. I hate that I have to do this, but I'm going to make you a deputy.
There's that whole writing of how Quark's like, no, you can't. And just fighting against it. And then he's completely
What's coming. I know what's coming.
Yeah. You know what's not. And it's usually not good, right? Whenever Odo speaks to Quark.
It's never good.
Never good. It's never good. But then when you realize he's deputizing you, you give off that laugh that just, you know, warms my heart. Oh, my God.
Scripted.
Yeah, oh,
scripted.
Yeah.
I was amazed to see that yesterday. Yeah. I went, oh, my God, that was scripted.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised, too.
Yeah, I would have thought that was my choice. No.
So
it's scripted.
Says huge laugh. And then at the very end, goodbye, like that. And you're leaving, right? Okay. Yeah. And that's when he says, you have two options. You can either be a prisoner or a deputy. Pick one. So he blackmails you. This is the blackmail scene is what this is. Yeah.
Isn't the first time.
I love the way you say, I'm a deputy at the end of the scene.
Yeah. I'm a deputy. Like you were trying it on for size is what it was. It was awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
All right.
For years, Renee and I would always say we didn't have that many scenes together, but I'm beginning, thanks to you guys, thanks to Delta Flyers, I'm beginning to say, no, we were wrong. We had more scenes than I ever remember and more than perhaps Renee ever remembered. But we had much more than I thought we did. And this being one of them,
Great scene.
It's a great scene.
In fact, this will lead me to one of my bonus comments later on. But this this scene was one of my favorites in the episode. It was great.
Good. So basically, Odo charges you with finding out the destination of the weapons, and his job is to find out how they got smuggled. I mean, how they began, the beginnings of the smuggling, basically. So where do they come from? And he wants to know from you, where are they going to? That's the end of the scene. Yeah. Great scene. Yeah.
Great scene. We go to Ops next. Sisko's going to Bajor to talk to the ministers there. He thinks there may be a coup happening. He tells Lee Nollis to check with his military contacts, see if the government has, you know, enough support. And he also tells Lee at the end of the scene that he's assigned him a bodyguard, that, you know, the terrorists are putting graffiti on his own door, on the commander's door. So things are bad. I did see a camera shadow in the scene. I'll bring up. Okay. You know, sometimes when actors walk too close to the lens, the lights behind the camera will shadow, you know, the camera will put a shadow
the light. Yeah.
And as Lee Nollis followed Sisko up there, there was a big camera shadow as he walked by pretty close, which is rare. Usually if they catch that, they'll do it again and fix it. But seemed like they didn't have a choice in that one.
Right. And this is another scene where it ends with the turbo lift descending, right? Doesn't he leave?
Is this
scene
where the camera, the shot goes?
No,
that's the one we talked about before.
Oh,
that's coming up. That's when Armin's in the scene. Remember Armin's on ops and he goes, we can talk about my compensation later. Cause he gives him the final bit.
And that's when it goes down. The blacklist. Yes.
And it's from the perspective of who's it. That's what I'm saying. This is the theme of, for me, the overall, the glue that holds this episode together are these turbo lift shots. Lifts. It's like bam, ba dam, ba bam, bam, bam. The turbo lift episode for me. Okay.
We go to the monastery garden next. Brile's approaching Kira there. And he asks her about her orb experience. He says, you know, you were in my vision. I had an orb experience. You were in my vision. Was I in yours? He's fishing here.
Yes, he is.
And she lies. She says no, which I thought was interesting. That's why, like, Armin, your theory makes total sense of setting up some romance that might be a reason for her to stay.
Yeah.
But the fact that she says no, to me, feels like she's not interested in going there with him.
Yeah.
Well, she may be interested, but she really feels that her purpose in life is to be useful, is to do things, is to help. And this is, although it would be comfortable, although it would be something that would be nourishing, it's not her role in life. That's what I got from watching that.
Yeah.
Corey had often left people out of focus for an extended period of time. For instance, in the scene between Quark and Odo, there's a long period of time when it's a two-shot of us, but Odo is very much in focus, and Quark, who's only a foot or two behind him in the office, is totally out of focus. But for an extended period of time, I get it sometimes, fading in and out. Of course, we have to do that. But this was an extended period of time. And I guess my ego didn't like the fact that I was out of focus for that long.
I remember the shots. It was when Odo turned away from you and was typing on a computer off camera. We couldn't see what he was doing, but he was talking about how he was looking into whatever information you mentioned or something.
Right. And then he did the same thing. It says in my notes that we see Richard Boehmer's back for a long period of time in the scene with Sisko. He wasn't interested in getting his face on camera.
I remember that. Yeah, they
You mean before Sisko leaves to go to the planet? When he's talking
to
Lee Nollis?
There was no coverage of Richard Boehmer in that moment. And it was kind of a longer... I agree with you. I forgot about that, but yeah.
Huh. And then, as I said, in the moment when they're walking under that tunnel, which we remember, they're totally in the black. They're totally, we lose them all together. We know it's them. We know that.
You can see a silhouette a bit, but yeah.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have bothered me so much if we hadn't lost the other actors in previous scenes. That's all.
So it actually stood out more because of that. You saw that. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, you know, they're in the monastery garden and they're talking and she's very evasive. She doesn't say what really happened in her vision. And then out of the blue, Vedic Wynn is up on top of the bridge. And again, it's just, the creepiness that you got from Vedic Barayal has sort of infected Vedic Wynn as well. She's extra creepy in this scene.
She's very creepy.
What the heck is going on? She's like,
but I get it from her. I get it because she's not trustworthy. What do you say, Armin?
I would venture to say a lot of people are saying one thing and meaning something else. Lots of innuendo throughout this scene.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout the episode.
Yes.
And it may be because this is a very political episode. Mm-hmm. And so we're suggesting that politicians are a little bit...
insincere.
Insincere.
Or
doublespeak. They have a lot of doublespeak going on.
Yeah, because she acts very friendly, super friendly and innocent, like she doesn't know anything.
Yeah, but then the line. Sorry.
And that's Louise's choice because the script says she's genuinely nice.
Okay.
That's what the script says.
But the writing, though, Wynn says, we've met before, haven't we, Major? Major? I mean, it just, to me, the last time that Kira talked to Vedic Wynn was, do you remember, after the almost assassination attempt, she grabs Vedic Wynn's arm very forcibly. I'm going to say Vedic Wynn has a bruise still from that. It was just like, I know it was you. I know what you were doing. Kira's on to her, you know? So it just, I don't know.
Well, if you're going to hire Nurse Ratched to play the part, you're going to have a little bit of teeth in it, you know?
Yeah, you are. You really are. So anyway,
she was very fake friendly. And then she does say at the end, I love, she says, stay as many days as you want, even a week if necessary. great
even
line.
Even a week. But what about that other line where Wynn says, Barayal says something and Wynn says, good for you, Vedic Barayal. After working so hard, you deserve a little recreation. So it's sort of like she knows that there's some
playing a game.
Or also that there's some possibility of fireworks between these two characters.
Exactly. And in the script, there is an ellipsis before she says recreation.
Oh, so is there?
The writers are giving her the okay to be that.
To be that way.
Make that suggestion.
Yeah.
We have a planet shot next. And then we go inside this war room on Bajor. And there's it's a beautiful set. By the way, I made another note about Corey's compositions of shots and things. He did some beautiful symmetrical photography in this episode. And what I mean by that is he would take the frame of the camera and balance it completely. He'd put right in the crosshairs the actor, as opposed to putting them on one side or the other, which is often what you do to sort of balance the edit. He would put them dead center. And in this scene, Sisko was beautifully composed dead center of that set in a way that almost made him look, you know, religiously holy in some way. He had this sort of circle around his head and this sort of frame.
Sisko or Krim, the general, or both of them?
Sisko in the entrance had a particular design that I thought was very flattering. And the symmetrical kind of framing he did was beautiful. Mm. And the general looked great as well. I thought the scene photographically was done beautifully.
If I was a guest star and I was General Krim and I walked on that set, I'd be very impressed. It would help my acting with this amazing war room. Yeah, it was really well done.
Yeah. Sisko visits the general, though. He says the army keeps pulling back from the circle. Like, why are they doing that? And Krim, you know, says, listen, it's Bajoran against Bajoran. You don't understand. Like, you wouldn't get it.
Right.
We can't. We're not going to kill our own people, basically. Mm-hmm. And Sisko tells him, then he tells him about this Krasari ship that's supplying weapons to the circle. And he does say, I'll keep you updated. We know a little bit, but we're trying to find out more.
But this is news to General Krim. He has no clue.
Yeah, Krim has no idea.
Yeah.
And then Sisko asks if maybe he could get Kira back on the station. That would be really helpful. And Krim says, it's not his call. You're going to have to talk to Jaro. And then Krim says, you know, you told me about the weapons before you asked the favor. You could have traded. You could have blackmailed me, basically.
You could have been politic about it.
Yes.
And Sisko says,
That's not how I work.
Wouldn't do that. And then Krim goes, I'll remember that about you. you're not this political person with some type of subterfuge going on, some evil motives. So yeah, I like that scene a lot.
Great scene. This actor, Armin, as you said, was up
Stephen Mocked.
Stephen Mocked was up for Picard to play the captain.
Oh my God.
I could totally see it. This actor had a lot of charisma and gravitas, and he was great.
You know, and originally the idea was to get another Kirk. You know, that's what they
totally made
possibly
sense
in their heads. So Stephen physically looked, you know, in that mold.
Yeah.
Mold.
You know, the writing, though, I've never heard someone say, when Sisko says, I understand she hasn't been reassigned yet, it would mean a great deal for me to get her back. And General Krim says, that's out of my purview. P-U-R-V-I-E-W. Have either of you ever seen it written that? I mean, that type of dialogue like that? I purview? Out of my purview?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. It's a fancy word, Garrett.
It's very fancy. And I know you read a lot on Voyager, so I'm sure you've come across
it. I've read a lot of fancy words. And Armin's read more fancy words than me. So
okay, all right.
It's in Armin's purview.
Is it in Armin's purview?
The next time I'm on, I will get you the OED definition of purview.
Thank you. Purview. That would really help me.
In the script, which was a surprise to me, it says Grimm is not sure which side he's on. This is the
really.
This is what it says in the script.
Wow.
But whatever side, he wants to be on the winning side. But he hasn't chosen as yet, is what the script says.
Interesting.
He hasn't chosen as yet which side he's on.
I see how he played that.
I got that from the performance. Yeah,
for sure.
Actually.
For sure.
Because I wasn't sure. I'm like,
yeah, hey, is he with the circle or not? Yeah, we don't know that. Yeah. Yeah. He's very pensive throughout this. That's for sure. He's thinking. The wheels are turning. Yeah.
Very well acted. Mm-hmm. We go to ops next. Dax tells Lee Nollis, who's, I guess, in charge. He feels, I guess, the first officer. So he seems like Lee Nollis, even though he didn't know what to do in this job, he's now in charge.
Yeah.
Dax says, hey, you got another call from this guy. I can't just keep smiling. And we realize that it is the Chrysari captain who's been docked, and they are, you know, investigating his ship, and he's not happy about it. He's been delayed for hours. And Lee is very friendly, tells him, you know, calm down. We'll get through this as quick as we can. And you see on the view screen, you see O'Brien in the background behind the captain.
Yeah.
You see him sort of, I thought it was funny framing, made me laugh because you could see.
Again, not focusing on the series regulars. Somebody's slightly, he wasn't, I don't know if he actually was out of focus, but certainly not dwelt upon.
No, right. Not dwelt upon. It's a very background, in the phone call was a very background kind of peripheral thing. But then we do go into the Chrysari cargo bay.
Yeah.
And we see O'Brien takes this case. He puts it back. Dax calls. And basically O'Brien and Dax decide they should just let him go and finish. If there's any further problems, they'll deal with it on the return in a few days. So at that moment, I was like, well, O'Brien hasn't gone through everything. Like, I guess they feel like he's innocent. But what we don't realize is O'Brien leaves. The captain says, prepare to depart. He leaves. And suddenly off the label of this case, the goo forms from Odo's goo forms into a rat.
Odo was the label. He was the label. And then he turns into the rat.
So it's not that they've checked everything on the ship, but they're going to move on to plan B, which is Odo stowing away and
to be perfectly honest, if I was Odo, I would have stayed the label. I wouldn't have turned into the rat. I would have been the label. But we don't know that it's Odo unless he turns into
something. Yes. Yeah, we got to see the goo. The rat did a good job, by the way.
The rat did a very good job.
Excellent.
We go to the monastery garden again. Sisko finds Kira kind of daydreaming there. And so she's getting into this monastery vibe. She's talking about daydreaming and just, you know, not being like, she's finally let go of her, I've got to do something. For a moment.
So she's softening up, you think?
She's softening up, okay. Which I liked. Sisko lets her know he hasn't given up, bringing her back if she's still interested. And she does mention that the circle is getting so close that she can hear the gunfire from the monastery.
Yeah.
And Sisko mentions he doesn't know if the military is going to back the government. But he wants her to know that he hasn't given up getting her back.
Right.
And then he heads out. And she starts to go back to daydreaming for a moment, but then she's grabbed and tranquilized by three mystery cape thugs.
Here's the thing. Don't you think Sisko would have heard that, Robbie? He just left. I mean, seconds from when the tussle happens, right? Yeah, she would have. I mean, I know they hyposprayed her. I get it. But still, the water, they were trampling in the water and the rocks. I think he would have heard the commotion, but no.
It reminds me of a showrunner I used to work for quite a bit who was all about geography. And it had to make logical geography sense. And this moment didn't. You bring up a good point.
Yeah.
If Sisko had taken off one way and Kira had turned and started to walk, and then you cut to her rounding a corner, some even 10 feet away.
Then that would make sense.
A cut would have said, oh, now we're a slightly different place. Yes. That's where the thugs get her.
Yes.
But it happened in the same spot.
The exact same spot where they were having the conversation, where he just vacated.
Geography and logic did not make sense.
No way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she gets jumped by the thugs. We go into Corsari cargo bay now. The rat sneaks out. The rat gave a beautiful performance, by the way.
The rat was so present.
Yes.
Yeah. It was
good.
Very focused.
Mm-hmm. He was a loan out from Disney. Sorry.
Loan out from Disney.
The rat watches as a Cardassian beams in. He's got a box of some weapons. The captain signs for it. The Cardassian leaves. And Odo, the rat, basically watches the whole thing happen. So
I love how they don't sign their actual signature, but it's just a thumbprint. That's it. That's their signature.
That actually would be a better signature for us now than
I think we should. Yeah, it's starting to convert. Happen.
Well, you just tap your credit card now. It's close. It's
that's
close.
True.
It's getting there. It's getting there.
That's true. Right. We go. Where did Kira go? Well, we're in an underground bunker.
The headquarters of the Circle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the Circle bunker. Lots of activity. Yeah. Kira's down there. Jaro is
now
revealed.
Talking about geography. That did not make any sense.
None at all. Wouldn't you come out as Jaro on the same level that Kira's sitting on? But no, he goes up to the mezzanine and he's up in the mezzanine of the cave. What the heck? What?
And also, why would you take her to the very place that you've been keeping secret for as long as you have?
Yes.
Do it somewhere else. Yeah. I understand why they have to do it because of the length of the episode. But it just didn't make sense to take her there into the center of where all the weapons are. It just didn't make any sense.
No.
Armin, I think Jaro thought he could convert her. I really felt that he's like, no, I can convince this person to join the cause.
A big gamble, though.
It's a huge gamble. You're right. It doesn't make sense. She should have been blindfolded. Should have been another location.
Well, Jaro walks out on that second level looking very dramatic. Frank Langella on top. Jaro says he is the boss of the Circle. He is the Circle, he says.
Yes.
And he wants to know from Kira what Sisko and Starfleet are going to do if they mount this coup. And Kira refuses to help. And Jaro basically says, well, we learned from the Cardassians how to get people to talk. So we know she's going to go get tortured. Poor Kira.
It's horrible.
Yeah. I wonder, were your caves the same caves that we used?
I'm sure they were.
Yeah. It looked like the caves that we shot Voyager on down the road.
Yeah.
Didn't it, Garrett? The same upper level. The same.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember the one episode, Robbie? I think it's Basics, where that alien serpent monster came in and ate Dennis Madelone.
Yep.
Well, that was there. He was on the second level.
On the same second level.
They were throwing spears at the serpent, and Dennis Madelone dies in that scene. Same.
Very dramatically. We go to Ops next. Sisko wants to find Kira. He's really worried about her. O'Brien says Odo's going to be back in 12 hours. So we still don't know what Odo has discovered. They won't know for 12 hours.
Right.
Quark enters Ops here and he does admit that he knows where they're holding Kira. It's in the labyrinths beneath the Parikian Peninsula or Parikian.
Hold on. I'll tell you the pronunciation. Because the other day I said, did they have somebody tell you this? And I realized, we always had a pronunciation guide.
Yes.
Parikian Peninsula.
Okay.
Okay. They're basically in the cave sets on stage 17 or whatever stage it was.
Yes.
Yes. They're in the cave set. That's where Quark says they're holding Kira. And Sisko calls for a rescue team, heads off to a runabout. And Lee Nollis wants to join. And he says, I feel like I owe it to Kira. And this is finally where that shot goes, where Quark is standing there.
Yeah.
And
it's their viewpoint of Quark still in ops, basically, right? Where it fades to black. But it was also interesting because Dax was part of the away team. And then when Lee said he wanted to come, Dax didn't go. It's usually Dax would still be part of the away team and Lee Nollis would be the addition to the away team. But they did a do-si-do where it was sort of like, oh, okay, well.
Transporters can only transport 5 people at a time. Do you know what else I love this scene, by the way, Armin? When you say, I know where you can find Kira. And then Quark says, you see, Odo blackmailed me into helping him. A matter that I've been meaning to bring to your attention, Commander. And Sisko goes, Quark?
Yeah, Quark. Oh,
so funny.
Very funny.
Yeah, that's scripted too. But not to the extent that Avery did it.
It was hot.
It was very hot.
It was
very hot. Yeah. The script simply says we don't have time for that now. That's what the script indicates. I thought it was
unnecessarily hot.
Unnecessarily.
Yeah, there was.
I mean, after all, yes, I understand that they want to get to Kira ASAP. I understand that that's the need right there in the scene.
Right.
But at the same time, my character has just brought them enormously valuable information.
You gave them the hideout. This is huge.
Again, this is what I'm saying. Quark keeps giving them keys to the kingdom over and over and gets no respect.
Really, after if I was Sisko getting this information from you, Quark, and when you say this is a matter I've been meaning to bring to your attention, Commander, I would have been Quark. You know, it would have been more like thanks for the information, but I don't have time for this right now. Right.
That's right.
That would have been the nicer way to do it. OK,
I agree with you.
Yep.
And I do agree that Quark continues. He gave Odo the information about the weapons being smuggled. He's now giving Sisko information about where. Like, he's the key. They should give him a little more respect.
Robbie, Quark is turning into the Kess of Voyager with a very integral person, you know, that is helping everybody.
The Kess and the Rodney Dangerfield.
And the no respect.
That's
right,
no respect. Exactly.
There you go. Pretty much. But he does have that lovely scream at the very end. We can discuss appropriate compensation for this one under more convenient time as the turbo lift is going down. It was brilliant. So good.
We go into the underground bunker next. Weapons are being handed out to the circle. Lots of weapons. And then literally just in the nick of time, the rescue team beams in. Thank God they didn't beam in 5 seconds earlier because there were a dozen guys with weapons that would have shot them right away. But anyway.
Yeah. But don't you think, Robbie?
They knew how to time it. Yeah,
they did. They timed it well. But Sisko debriefs them after they've beamed in, like, shouldn't you have talked about
this conversation?
Yes, in the shuttle, in the runabout. Here's our plan. This is our strategy. He gives them the strategy after they beamed in while they're amongst the danger. And I thought, oh, okay, that's fine, I suppose. Straight power play. Whoever finds Kira, attach this comm badge to her and get her out of her. Beam her up to sickbay. That's it. Yep. They run in. And their guns ablazing.
Immediately, firing. A firefight happens. Firefight. They find Kira. She's bloody. She's got all the. She's been tortured.
That was good makeup. She looked like she'd been beaten quite a bit. So
Bashir goes up to her and ties her. He gets shot. Now Bashir gets shot. It looks like it literally goes through his body and hits the wall on the backside. But yet, I don't think they deal with it.
Like, no,
he's not injured at all. Did you catch that, Armin?
I don't. We had the same problem in the last episode where you know,
Lee Nollis got shot. Yeah,
and the other guy got shot, and the other guy is gone, totally gone.
Right,
Lee Nollis just got a pain in the back, and that's about it.
You would assume that the Cardassian weapons were on kill, set to kill, not to stun, right? Because one guy already did die, and Lee Nollis did not. And again, here, you would think the Bajorans are defending themselves on set to kill as opposed to stun as well, but yet Bashir lives.
Yeah, strange. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. But, you know, you can't kill a series regular.
You can't.
No, you can't. And literally, when I saw the rescue team beam in with the two guys in the brown uniforms, I was like, they're going down. They're going down.
So it's they like, were the Bajoran red shirts, is what you're saying? Those guys?
Okay. But they didn't die either. They didn't die.
Oh, they were alive too?
Yeah. Oh. At least that's what the script says. I don't remember the shot, but the script says everybody gets out, including the the deputies, as it says in the script. It causes the deputies.
Yeah. Okay. But Robbie, remember in the last episode when you were joking about how when the Cardassians at the Stone Quarry are being shot, how they did that jumping backwards flip like that. They were doing the same. The Cardassians. The Bajoran security guys were doing the same flip back and.
Yeah, it's like the feet go up and you just land right where your feet were moments before.
Yes.
Instead of falling against a rock or, you know.
Yes. So when I saw that, I said they just did a Robbie special is what they did. That's a Robbie special. There you go.
Yeah. Well, they go back. They're in the infirmary. Bashir, who miraculously has no injuries from his phaser hit.
And why is a doctor on an away team? He shouldn't be part of the attack team. No. Yes, I suppose he could be there in case someone got hurt.
Right.
But he shouldn't be part of the attack team.
No. No, definitely not.
I don't even think Sisko should be part of the attack team. He's too risky.
Exactly. That's what number one is for. That's right.
Yeah. That's right. Linala should have. Well, he was there. Yeah.
Bashir's fixing her wounds. Kira says they have to hurry, that Lee is the only chance they've got. They've got to get Lee Nalas back there. He can speak to the Chamber of Ministers.
Yeah.
Maybe that can stop this. And then Odo arrives. He's back. He's no longer a rat.
Yeah.
He found out that it is Cardassian.
That's what you think. As far as my character is concerned, he's still a rat.
He did find out about the Cardassian weapons. The Cardassians, figures out here, the Cardassians are just using Jaro and the Circle to get rid of Starfleet, and then the Cardassians are going to come back.
A clever turn, I thought. A very clever turn.
Yeah. Very clever turn, I agree.
Yeah. And Odo has the proof. He actually stole that pad, the pad from the manifest pad. And he has the Cardassian the gold thumb scan on it. Yeah.
Cardassian details of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. We go to Ops next. Sisko asked Dax to call Bajor. She says all the channels are jammed. And Kira says, well, that means this has started. The coup has started then.
Yeah. And that's when Sisko says, get me Admiral Chakotay at Starfleet Command. And I thought, did Robert Beltran did a what? I was really confused.
I know. I was excited. There was going to be some tie-in, dad or somebody.
That's what I thought. But that guy definitely was not indigenous. The guy on the screen was
was he McKee either. He wasn't.
No, he wasn't McKee. Not McKee. No, not even close.
So yeah, Sisko wants to talk to Starfleet Command Admiral Chakotay, and we go to a planet shot. And then down to the shrine where Wynn joins Jaro in the temple, inside the temple.
Yes.
And they have a wonderful scene here. I thought it was really well played by
both. Oh my God. The caliber of acting in that scene. Agreed. Oh my God.
Really good.
Excellent.
Wynn joins Jaro there. He basically asks for her public support, that if he gets the religious support, then the people will go along with it. She says that she wants, orthodox values in Bajor again, but the assembly is not listening to her. And he says, well, he can make that happen. He can make her the new Kai. He'll get behind that.
Yeah. And he also said, how would it be if the new leader of Bajor joins your orthodox sect? So he's basically saying, I'm all in. I'm also orthodox like you. I'll even join your sect as long as you scratch my back.
I'll sell
back.
Bibles for you if you want.
Exactly. Wonderful scene. So you see the religious and the political coming together in the scene.
She doesn't even say Minister Jaro. She calls him by his first name here, Essa. She's like, I need more than that, Essa. So there is a history between these two clearly already.
Yeah, so we go to space shot next and then into ops where Sisko gets a call from Admiral Chakotay. O'Brien tells Sisko that two Bajoran assault vessels are headed towards DS9 right now.
Yeah.
And that all non-Bajorans have been ordered to evacuate. So Sisko takes the call, talks to the Admiral, tells him the Cardassians are using this civil war to return control of the station and control of the wormhole. Cardassians want it all back. Admiral says, is this internal to Civil War? And Sisko's like, well, yeah. And he goes, well, prime directive means we have to leave it alone, stay out of internal affairs at Bajor, get out of there. That's an order. So the Admiral's not helping him out.
Nope.
You can't trust anybody named Chakotay is what I...
You can't. How just, dare you, sir? They, yes. How dare you?
Maybe he was McKee. Maybe he was.
Maybe he was McKee.
Things are not looking good for our heroes here.
No. No. Yes. We have a final scene in Ops where Sisko asks Chief O'Brien how long it would take to evacuate Deep Space Nine. O'Brien says, yeah, you know, 3 hours. But Sisko goes, no. I mean, complete evacuation where we take everything that's Starfleet, all the equipment, everything. And at that point, O'Brien says, well, probably a week or so. I don't know. I mean, days. Yeah, this will take forever. And just Sisko ends with that line. Then I guess some of us won't quite be done by the time they get here. And that's the end of the episode there.
So that's a very politic thing for him to do. And let us remember what General Grimm said. This is not a politic man. I guess the episode proves that to be not true.
Yeah. Sisko is learning how to play the nuance of politics here.
How to play ball.
Basically. Yes.
How to play ball. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. All right.
So part three, we're going into it. We never had a three-parter.
We never had a three-parter.
Really? Never.
No.
We've only had a couple of two-parters.
And
not
very
many.
Few two-parters, even, you know, if you're talking about two-parters, we had very few two-parters.
Yeah. Two or three the whole 7 years.
Yeah. I think it's amazing. I love the three-parter here. I do.
I don't know what was in the thoughts of the writers and the producers. This, of course, is the beginning of the second season. I can tell you that we were losing viewer share at this point, and it may
really?
Be that they decided to do a three-parter to try to oomph the viewer share.
Wow.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I mean, that's me thinking I have no proof of this.
Yeah,
no.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm thinking, I'm remembering back when and the problems that we were facing and...
That makes sense. So it's a big episode. It's a big three-part episode.
Right.
It's huge.
And if you've got an uncredited actor of that caliber, why not use him?
Why not? Why not?
What is your takeaway? What is your lesson? What is your
my
overall theme?
Moral lesson, code of conduct.
Or the circle.
This is a hard one for me to come up with a simple lesson. My mind went to the famous quote of Lord Acton, where he said, all power seems to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's where my mind went.
I love that. I think that's so apropos. It really is. I think I'll go to Armin. Armin, what is your overall theme or lesson from this episode?
Well, as I watched this episode, and I've mentioned this already, everybody had innuendo. Everybody was saying one thing, but it was obvious they were meaning something else. It wasn't just the Bajorans. It was also the Starfleet people as well. And so I went not to Lord Ashton, but I went to Common Man William Shakespeare and something from the Scottish play where he said, there are daggers in men's smiles.
Oh, great. I love that. Yeah.
I hate to be cynical. It's very true, but I want to believe people's smiles, and I hate when I go to that paranoid place where I don't trust people. But this episode shows us don't be naive. Yeah.
Don't be naive, yeah. And don't put your toes in a running stream because you'll get mugged.
That's a great lesson right there. Don't put your toes in a running stream because you will get mugged. Yeah.
What's your lesson, Garrett?
Yeah, for me, it's about trying to remain a free thinker. I think a lot of times because, you know, we have parents when we grow up, so we're taught to trust what our parents say without any question, that they know what's best for us. And then as adults, we're taught to trust our leaders, our political leaders, or our bosses at work, you know, whatever it may be. And sometimes people end up acting like sheep and they don't sit there and they don't do the due diligence. They don't do the research. They don't question and trying to see what the other side is, what the flip side is. And I do think that people should try. The lesson is be a free thinker. You know, don't always go along with the crowd. You do have to really do your own research, because sometimes there are ulterior motives by the people that should have your best interests at heart, and they're not. So be a free thinker.
As Excellent. Ronald Reagan Excellent. Said, trust but verify.
Exactly. Okay, there you go. There you go. So that would have been my thank you for saying my lesson.
Here's a question I'd like to pose.
Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Usually the sphere, the orb, the tear of the prophet, as we used to say, usually gives you an insight into the reality of the situation. Did we get anything from that vision?
No. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. Except that there's political strife happening, and that there could be nookie between Beriah and Kira.
Yeah. I'm thinking... What was that for in this plot line for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, unless it pays off in the next episode.
I was about to say, I hope it pays off, because that would be a shame if it was just meant to confuse and not give insight or tie back to something that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Well, our Patreon poll theme moral of this episode is submitted by Katie McCarty. Katie says the theme is people in power may not always have your best interests in mind.
There you go.
I like it.
There you go.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening. And before we go, I wanted to talk with Armin about the PanCan. Armin, I know you've been involved with this group for a long time. We know a little bit about it, but tell us what's going on.
Sure. Before we all leave and say goodnight, I am part of an organization called Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, which we abbreviate to PanCAN. Our organization is there to help people who are diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. It's to help the families, to help the friends, to do everything we can to make it easier. One of the great things we've done over the course of many years, 25 years actually, is raise the survivability rate. Mm-hmm. When my wife, who had pancreatic cancer, was diagnosed 20 years ago, the survival rate was about 3%. It is now up to 13%, for which we're very grateful, but it's not good enough. Mm-hmm. So we continue to look to raise money for PanCAN. And if you feel it in your heart that you want to help this incredible organization that not only am I a part of, but Kitty Swink, my wife, is a part of, John Billingsley is a part of, Jonathan Frakes is a part of, Juan Carlos Cotto, who is Manny Cotto's brother, is a part of. All of us represent what's called Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer. And our team, as well as other teams, are raising money for help. We already have raised about our team has raised about $125,000, but we want to raise more. Please go to pancan.org and help us out. Look for Team Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer, and contribute if you can.
It's a great group of people to be involved in. I'm so grateful that you've gotten us involved, Armin, and the improvements, as you said, to survivability are incredible. Those are real people and real lives that have been changed.
It makes a difference. What we try to do is not only help the patients and their families and their friends, but we also are trying to educate doctors, because the problem with pancreatic cancer is when you really start to manifest symptoms, it's usually a little too late. So we're trying to educate doctors so that when they hear about these symptoms, when they see these symptoms, they immediately check for pancreatic cancer, something that they usually don't do. Mm-hmm. And so it's not only helping families and patients, but it's also educating doctors, also looking for cures. And looking for a cure for pancreatic cancer will help towards cures of other cancers as well.
Thank you for sharing this important message with everybody. We appreciate
that. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Join Robbie and I next time when we will be reviewing the episode The Siege, the third part of this three-parter of DS9, which Voyager never got a three-parter. I'm so jealous. For all of you Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.